This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Little Bob here. This summer, shop the latest small space solutions at Bob's Discount Furniture. From retro chic bedroom sets to stylish space-conscious Bob-o-pedic sofas, it's all at Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Good morning and welcome to On the Bench. I'm your host for this episode, Brendan Sinone. I'm joined by it's a crowded room right now. First off, Colby Crawford's first like OTB appearance. Colby, welcome.
Appreciate you having me. Glad we made it here.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Colby's running on 4 hours of sleep. He just made it into Tallahassee. We'll get into the travels here and we'll share some travel stories as well. I think that's what the summer's for, because there's not a whole lot else going on other than recruiting stuff. And also Zach's last On the Bench episode. Zach, bye. This is sad.
It's definitely bittersweet. But yeah, we can get more into that. Now I got another episode of just kind of like a thank you to the fans, and just diving into some of my favorite moments covering Florida State. But
we'll do it after the ad read. I want to do a teaser on that. And then Chris Knee as well. Chris, welcome. You look lovely this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Raising morale.
Are you ready for bench season, buddy?
It is what it is, man. you want me to share my honest opinion about
Chipper sitting right next to him? You know, I'm gonna bring the heat right next to him on the bench. So
here's my honest opinion on the next month. Depending on what FSU does in the first three games of the football season, it's all going to matter, or none of it's gonna matter.
Yeah. I feel like the image that I get of Chris on the bench this summer is like that. You remember the Popeyes craze when after the shift? That's Chris on the bench this summer. And then Colby's all jacked up, like, let's go. Like,
yeah, it's like a Jack Russell Terrier with like all this like a puppy energy and stuff. And then we got like just the old like Great Dane is just like, I've seen too much. Also, shout out Ben, wherever you are right now. All right, let's get into it. First off, a shout out to our sponsors, Chattanooga Whiskey, crushing it in the craft distillery game. Apparently they have like a blend, like taste your own kind of blend mix out right now. Like it's like a set of different their experimental stuff from their Founders Edition. So it's you get to try like along the way in different samples of it to see how it's changed over the years. Very cool. Again, Chattanooga Whiskey does it a little differently around here. And for that, we appreciate that they're willing to paint outside the lines. But also, if you want the more traditional stuff, they do awesome with that too. The 111 proof, awesome, really good stuff. And what does Trey Rowland always say, guys? After you drink a little bit of Chattanooga whiskey, who should you call?
The Turner Group.
Colby, say the Turner Group after I do a pause like that.
The Turner Group.
He's got it. All right.
After Chattanooga Group. Whiskey, sell your home.
Colby's doing his Trey Rowland impersonation there. Sorry, Colin. And then also, Colby, another thing, we have to apologize a lot to Colin while doing the ad read, because I get the ADHD brain. We have to get back on. He likes it. He enjoys apologizing. So Colin, Amy Turner do an awesome job, seriously, in the home buying, home selling market. We've had three people buy homes through him, which is a really big deal. It's a huge no, it's a huge commitment, obviously. And I know it could be treacherous waters out there, and you want someone who you trust, right? So he's throughout the state of Florida, him and his wife do an awesome job, and legitimately good people as well, are going to work hard, well-connected. So Turner Group is where we'd have you go. So yeah, we're going to get into OV season here, guys. FSU starts it up here May 29th. Now, OV started earlier in May for other programs. It's been interesting to me to see that, like, that paced up calendar. Some schools are go ahead and trying to push for commits earlier. A lot of that stuff's getting, like, negotiated ahead of time. Zach, you're nodding your head. I know that you're covering this at a broader scope. You'll be covering the state of Florida recruiting pretty soon for us officially for 24/7 Sports. That's where you're going if people aren't familiar with it. We put that on the board a week ago, but that's what Zach's going to be doing. So you have an idea of just like the timing, the pacing for more of a national scope. So I guess what's happening, and let's kind of like tie it back to Florida State. And I think their decision is more just to kind of keep it in the traditional months of summer months of recruiting OVs.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is in their control. I think a lot of it is it's multifaceted, right? I think, first of all, a lot of kids are essentially taking quasi-official visits before OV season. So they're, you know, they're getting paid to go and visit schools across the country for multiple days, getting an in-depth look at, you know, some of their top programs during the spring over the last few months. So there's a feeling that like OVs are kind of unnecessary to those high-end players because they've already gotten in-depth looks at, you know, most of the schools that they're seriously interested in. And then, like you said, a lot of these prospects are getting pressured, I think, to make decisions earlier because schools are telling them, hey, you know, for whatever reason, we only have one or two spots left at this position. If you wait and you go through with all your OVs, we might not be able to take you. Obviously, that's a case by case thing, right? You can't tell the number one player in the country or, you know, a five-star prospect that typically. But for those, you know, lower four-star, high three-star players, like that's absolutely a reality. And I think I looked the other day, I think it's 60% of the top 20 players in the state of Florida are already committed, are already off the board. And a new trend I think that's worth following as well is the majority of those prospects, funny enough, I think the only one that I've confirmed right now that's committed somewhere and is taking other OVs is Mekhi Williams, that's committed to Florida State, the top-ranked player in FSU's class. So it's, you know, when these guys are committing, I think a lot of times they're agreeing with the school, like, hey, we're agreeing on this number, and you're also not going to take other visits. I think a potential byproduct of the speeding up of this process is, you know, a lot of times when you see players making decisions this early in the process, if you look back at previous cycles, they often change their mind by the time the cycle ends. So, you know, the most important data point by far for these players is how these teams perform, you know, in the fall when it comes to their mind being changed on a school. So, you know, coaching changes, all that's going to come into play once games start being played. So I think you could see a lot more movement in the fall when it comes to decommitments and flips. But yeah, there's been a very noticeable shift in how early players are making decisions this cycle. And when they're making decisions, they're kind of set in that decision, at least through the summer.
And for context here, for Florida State's class going into this window, they're currently ranked 41st nationally. Zach mentioned Mekhi Williams. I was trying to say it there, but was on mute. Old and rusty here. 91 grade. He's the only four-star prospect in Florida State's class currently.
LSU and Wisconsin are both making valiant runs at him, and it's going to be very interesting with those two. He goes to Wisconsin this weekend. He wraps up his visits with LSU.
Wisconsin, the constant and bizarre thorn in FSU side.
Madtown, baby. Something about Madtown.
It's maybe one of the most
damning indictment. What are they like 0-4 in their last four like head-to-heads?
Yeah, this dates back to like when FSU was winning. Like that 24 class, I want to say. They had that DN, that Nick Clayton, that they were battling Wisconsin for.
That they loved and were comparing to Jermaine Johnson, and then all of a sudden didn't want him anymore. Yeah. I remember that.
Who else does it really extend to? I'm only really familiar with, I guess, Colton Joseph, even maybe from the transfer portal. I don't know how serious that look was.
Nick Clayton was one. There was this big, he was like a backup defensive lineman from Tulane, like a high end one, but like he was going to be a depth piece. And they decided they wanted him, but it was too late. And Wisconsin already jumped on him.
The quarterback. DB that went there and then ended up at Miami is another one.
Xavier Lucas. But that was like they just didn't push for that. Like that was more just them missing the eval, I think. The quarterback, was it Carter Smith?
Carter Smith.
I think they got their own version of Carter Smith here with Logan Flaherty. No? No?
That's what you're making?
I mean, yeah, they're both from the same area. They have similar strengths, similar builds. Carter Smith came in and played this year, I think. I mean, I don't think that's a great – who's your comp, Zach?
I have no idea. But, yeah, I mean, it's Wisconsin's always been a weird thorn in the side of the Norvell recruiting regime. I don't know why.
You know, I'm happy you're leaving. I'm glad this is happening. Overdue.
I think from what I've heard, Wisconsin is like – because their whole thing was – remember that last year they made the decision around the same time to keep Luke Fickell, and their whole thing was like, oh, we're just going to give him more money to work with. What a novel concept that would be. They have a lot more resources, and that's what's given them confidence with a guy like Mekhi Williams.
And I think in the portal class they landed too. They kind of went out there and took some big swings I think that's definitely still a job this year that you go into circled as if they don't perform. But right. I mean, they definitely put a lot of money into that roster.
On a broader topic, as we get into this and get into the we'll dive into the minutiae, like who's actually visiting, break that down. I think there's still an appetite, not as strong a one as in past years, but I think it still exists. But as we continue to kind of weigh the context of where Florida State is in the recruiting pantheon, right? Where they stand amongst other, why are you smiling, Zach? What's happened?
Nothing.
Okay. I have ADHD and you're just smiling.
Gonna like start making like weird hand movements.
Yeah, it's not helping. It's not helping with my focus. I'm interested in like whether FS what?
I said I have to mess you up on my last episode.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know. Is Florida State going to spend on recruits? That's what I want to talk about. Zach's saying no. I don't know.
Can they? The better question is, can they spend on recruits?
I think we will get some. We've talked about litmus tests. I think we saw the first one for quarterback did not work very well. So that was, I would say, a failure based on what your pecking order. No, I don't mean Logan Flair. It's like it's a hard. I don't want to talk about like I was talking about more Champ Mounds. Mons, sorry. Chance Mounds.
You think for this, the most important prospect you've ever covered in your recruiting career to this point that you would know his name?
Hey, Colby, Byer Sinone, sponsored by the Turner Group. All right, here we go. If someone tells you they're available all day to help out, and then when you ask them to help, they're not available, is
help
that
with what? Available all help day, with, what?
With recruiting updates.
Well, I don't know the context, but exactly. I probably wouldn't have made myself available all day.
Yeah. Thank you, Colby. Well, that's why we're replacing Zach with Colby. I don't know how else to say it. This is going to be an upgrade. There's no other way around it.
Colby, get ready for that.
The best ability is
availability. I'm around to help all day. Hey, Zach, can you do this? I'm driving 40 minutes. I'll get to it when I'm there. Not all day. Ended up being an important prospect to document. Just saying. Yep. We had an exclusive.
3 years in advance.
Okay. Better early than late, I always say.
It's always good to be on the ground level for something you're going to miss later on.
So on the broader scope of things, I like that the ADHD has now like the tendrils have reached out to all of you right now. It's just, I'm pulling
tendrils. I hate when you say tendrils.
Why?
I don't know. It's just weird.
It's like an octopus.
Dude.
Byer Sinone, sponsored by
the Turner Group.
Octopus are probably aliens. Octopi.
Also known that.
What was that whole alien thing that you were talking about yesterday?
It was Disclosure, the Spielberg movie, and some theories about what he thinks like the aliens are actually like us from the future potentially. I don't know about, I don't think that's a spoiler, but that's like his theory on aliens.
You just spoiled the whole movie.
I don't think so. I mean, they've, it's actually kind of cool. Like they've kept that the third act from like their marketing team. Like no one who does marketing for them knows. I don't know who the studio is. Sorry, Paramount. I don't know. But I hope I don't get, anyways, cut that. They don't know. Like no one knows how it ends. It's like kept very quiet and that's cool, I guess. So FSU going to spend money. Back to the point. We're going to see, but part of the battle is, and this is more like holistic, is not only is it a matter of are you able to spend, willing to spend, whichever one you guys want to side with there. It's also are players willing to commit to Florida State, regardless of price. And I was talking to one recruits, someone in their family who was like, yeah, Florida State offered a good amount for us. It was tough to pass on more stable situations. And so they took less to go with more stability. And so that does kind of, and that's a one-off, but you know, for the FSU is cheap narrative. I think there's examples of them willing to spend and we can, you know, decipher whether we think it's optimal spending, right? If you're doing, but that's a different topic. And so that's something that they're battling. And we're going to see, I think we already kind of have a decent indication of where it is. You're 41st heading into this weekend. But we'll see if some of the top ranked guys, not just this weekend, but in the next few, if they're able to get them, if they're able to get blue chip kids to say yes or no. And yeah, they're going to be offering a lot of playing time, I think, probably the most that they ever have. I think playing a lot of freshmen and sophomores this year is part of the plan to kind of further that pitch. So, I mean, I think that's all part of what they're trying to do to reset it, whether it's effective or not and whether it's too late. Like, we're about to find out, I think, through some of it, through the next few weeks. And then, as Chris said, we'll then see, you know, if it matters or not once you get through the first month of the season.
I think,
because as I well said, just to pat myself on the back, we haven't covered games that have mattered here in Tallahassee in like 3 years. So since Jordan Travis snapped his leg, we haven't really covered a game that actually mattered.
I think the official visitor list speaks to the price range they're willing to spend in. There's 55 kids currently expected to officially visit here. That number will fluctuate, obviously, as some commit elsewhere, some commit to FSU, cancellation, so on and so forth. But like you look at that list, it's not jam-packed with a lot of high-end guys who are going to be major spending sprees. There are some defensive ends on there. There's a few others at other positions. But all in all, it's a lot of three-star talent on that list. I think it speaks to them having an understanding of who and what they can spend on, but it being a limited quantity that they can do that with.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to give them some credit for is, like, I do think, and I think I've said this before, like, they have a realistic, you know, idea of the prospect, the level of prospect they can land. And much of what's been going on the last few weeks in the front office has been calling agents of all these players that they're planning to bring in and being like, are we going to be within your price range, essentially? And if not, then, you know, let's not waste the time, you know, not waste each other's time of going through with an official visit and, you know, continuing that recruitment. So I do think that they have, you know, the guys they're bringing in are going to, you know, either be guys that they can't afford to pay or guys that, you know, they feel like they'll be within a range for. So, yeah, I mean, to be frank, like, you know, looking through the top ranked players in the state of Florida right now, like, I would not project a four-star in the current rankings, that uncommitted four-star to end up at Florida State. That's just how it looks right now. Florida's not the only state.
Wait, just get that air real quick to like let that settle in. What you just repeat it one more time, please, because I think wild.
I would not currently predict a prospect in the state of Florida that has four stars or five stars by their name to commit to Florida State by summer's end.
Whew. Okay, continue.
Obviously, the state of Florida is not the only state that they recruit. There's going to be, you know, the state of Georgia is important to them. I know they're involved with some high level prospects in the Southeast, obviously, like Alabama, Mississippi. They'll be able to shoot their shot with a number of high level players. It's just, it's going to be picking and choosing the right battles.
41 of the 55 currently listed are 3 stars. 14 are 4 stars, no 5 stars.
One, I will say, the Texas running back, Dalen Gordon, about him right now. I think Florida State, like I said, rankings can fluctuate. That is a 4-star from Texas. I know Zach was talking about Florida, but I think that's one, as of right now, that they might be sitting in a good spot. Now, long way to the fall. A lot of other people can get involved over the summer and into the fall. But as of now, heading into that June 19th official visit, I think Florida State sits well there.
Yeah, I think another 4-star test is like a Sam Lejeune. That's a guy they've invested a ton of time. Yeah. They've put themselves in a good spot. They have some schools. They've got a battle, LSU, for example. McKay Allen, the linebacker. That one's a little bit more wide open. There's a lot of schools still in that mix, but FSU seems to be one that's in a fairly decent spot with him. And then Nick Williams has worked hard at kind of building a board of 4-star ends. Desmond Malpress comes to mind, Abraham Sesse, but that's a long shot. There's a few others. It will be interesting to see who he ultimately is able to get as his best in his bunch.
I think that that June 12th weekend, just scrolling through it now, you mentioned Sam Lejeune, and like that's probably their most concentrated amount of like true power four head-to-head battles. Like Deshaun Poole is going to be a Tennessee battle. Ellis McGaskin, I don't think they're trending super well there right now. But yeah, like, he's
Florida this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know if it – Kamarian Johnson's another guy who we reported on as another Florida State battle. And I think they're I think they're later visits for all of those guys too compared to others. So we'll see if they end up making it here. But like that's probably the most like head-to-head like SEC battle type of weekend that I can see.
So when I talk
– go ahead, Chris.
Real quick on that weekend, when I talked to Flaherty about when are you taking your OV, it sounds like he's going to be up here pretty consistently over the next month. But he said something along the lines of the biggest weekend or the most important weekend or the weekend with most important visitors. I forget exactly how he termed it, but that's essentially the connotation of what he was getting at. So I looked at that list and was trying to figure out that weekend. Usually it's June 19th, just traditionally. That's how it's been built out. I really think it's more the June 12th weekend as of right now this year.
That could be the a little bit of the expediting that might be like for stragglers or whatever. I don't know. It'll be interesting. This is a different calendar than what we've dealt with in the past. And, you know, we're those longtime listeners know we like to kind of try to figure out the trends as they're happening in real time. It's fun for this group here. All right. So for May 29th weekend, so that's coming up on Friday. Scrolling down here, currently we have 5 confirmed official visitors. And there's some like important trench players in this class. There's one committed right now, Zach. I'll start and have you talk about him because he's in the state of Florida from Indian Rocks Christian School in Largo, Florida. And Indian Rocks has a really good donut place there. I don't remember what it's called. It's Lighthouse Donuts, maybe. Cash only. I went like 10 years ago. I don't know if it's still around. Anyways, Anthony Cavallaro, defensive end, a very long, lengthy athlete. This shut down after this weekend, Zach. Is there anything else that FSU fans need to be on the lookout for after the FSU OV?
No, he's locked in. You know, he's told me multiple times that he has no other official visits planned and that he's shut down with FSU. I mean, I don't need to say the obvious, like no recruitment's ever completely done. But, you know, I feel pretty good about where FSU stands with him. As a prospect, you know, I think it's more likely that he, you know, grows into like a traditional like strong side end. You know, I don't think he's like super twitchy or can bend like extremely well. But you know, I watched him at the Under Armour camp a few months ago, and he looks solid. Like I think that's a pretty good get for them, and I like the length and just the overall build. And he's a good kid as well. Like that, I think that's becoming more and more important in college football. Is you know, for these coaches, when you're all this money's on the line now with these contracts, right? Like you can't really afford to miss as much as you used to. And I think a huge component of that is evaluating the character of a kid. You're seeing a current situation play out at Tennessee with their DN that they landed from Penn State, and he hasn't even like reported to summer workouts yet. And there's a photo going around of him flexing a bunch of cash on Instagram, I think. So, yeah, it's just I think kids like Anthony Cavallaro are the types you want to get. Obviously, that can also play football at a high level. But I do think that that's something that, you know, just going around during the spring and talking to coaches at different, you know, these different schools across the country that are recruiting the state, like that's some of the, you know, the first questions they're asking, like, is, you know, character questions. Like they want to know that this is a guy that they can rely on that's not going to flame out.
Okay, let's go to the top of the board. So there is a blue chip prospect visiting. That's Carlos May from up in Birmingham, 90 grade, really good player. He's a little older for his class and missed time with injury two seasons ago. And then early on in the season this past year kind of took a little while to get going, but was pretty dominant once he did. So kind of a potentially ascending prospect there. But that's also one that you're going to have to battle for. Let's see. Yeah. Who else is he at? Oh, yeah, he's got a play.
So Auburn's a big one there right now. Georgia and Ohio State are the other two OVs beyond Auburn after FSU. But Auburn's been the school that's kind of set the pace in that recruitment throughout it. He's a versatile defensive lineman that can play up and down the defensive line, especially for Florida State with what they like to do. That's why T-Knight likes him. He's a guy that Mike Norvell went to see in January. Terrence Knight has been involved with a good bit. Nick Williams has been by that school, I believe, as well. Jaquan Rogers, I believe it is his teammate, who's another guy FSU has been involved with a little bit. But yeah, with Carlos May, FSU is going to have to swing hard and hit it out of park this weekend and then try to outlast Auburn in a couple weeks. But I think that's going to be a tough task if the Tigers truly want him. He did take took an extremely long day visit in the spring with a number of family members. So he has had the opportunity to do a sort of like an official visit at FSU, like Zach was talking about earlier with prospects doing.
Going back to them, I think especially defensive side of the ball, there's going to be a lot of emphasis on playing time. Like if you're playing the CFB game, like, you know, that's one of the hard sells right now is playing time. And this is someone who fits that profile because of age. Like I said, he's a little older because of size. He's 6'4", 305 pounds. That's would immediately make him one of the bigger defensive linemen in the room. So that's someone we'll see if they end up pushing for him financially, you know, in a way where they can make a real swing there. Next up, let's talk about Jaden Miles, running back from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Chris, this is another one with a lengthy official visitor list. So tough draw here, potentially.
This tells you how long FSU's been involved with him. Gabe Fertitta was his first offer, and Gabe Fertitta left FSU, worked somewhere else for a year, and came back to FSU. So that's how long FSU's been involved with him, long time. FSU was part of his top six. Now essentially his top four. Those four are FSU, Ohio State, LSU, Kentucky. He visits those four in that order over the next month. LSU obviously is one you don't discount with a kid who's from Baton Rouge. Kentucky does have a back with Kelsey Gerald from South Florida. And I'm not sure with Meatball and the Buckeyes how much they're invested in him versus other backs. I'm just not sure.
Meatball.
Yeah, Lachlan. So it's going to be interesting. FSU's been a long-standing one with him. He's a young man that I just don't have a great relationship with. Like, I haven't been able to talk to him enough to really have a good read on it myself. So not sure where that one stands as far as which one of those four probably is setting the pace right now.
Yeah, I know that FSU likes him a lot. I don't know of their specific standing. I think they probably feel a little bit better about some of their guys that they're after. You know, Dalen Corden, like Colby mentioned, is definitely one. And then I think Marquise. I don't Quis. Know.
I think it's Quis.
All right. I think they feel pretty solid about him. I know he was on an OV to Colorado last weekend, but Jaden Miles is definitely one of their top targets. And a guy that they, you know, They could land, like you said, Chris. I think it depends on some of these other schools and where they stand, right? Like where he falls on their priority list. Because if LSU wants him, it's very likely he'll end up at LSU or Ohio State for that matter.
And as a player, highly productive, multiple years on varsity for that program. Like the stats back up that he's a high level kid.
Running back room in general is interesting as well for them because they have Chroma, Usman Chroma. They're hoping becomes a bell cow for them this year, but that would just make him, if it all goes well and you retain him after his two-year deal, yeah, he's a junior. They do like Amari Clemens quite a bit.
Amari Thomas.
No, that's on me. I knew as soon as I said it wasn't correct anymore. My bad. But they do like Amari Thomas as a freshman. But he was the only one they took in this past cycle. So running back being an emphasis to maybe get multiple guys, different body types. You know, that's it's been a pretty robust board. As Colby mentioned another name earlier, and they've gone after a few different types there. So something to keep an eye on as well, as like that might be a position where they expand on some this year and try to take multiple guys. Next up, from Lake Cormorant, Mississippi, and there's going to be multiple defensive linemen from Lake Cormorant in the next few years coming out of there too. So maybe you're trying to establish a little bit of a pipeline, if those exist anymore. Do pipelines exist? Buyers to known. Is that a thing anymore in NIL era?
So, yeah.
I'm buying.
Ooh, don't be so optimistic. How come?
At least in Virginia and some other places through the Carolinas, I've definitely seen some of that. Now, as we evolve into this, you know, I think there's a litany of factors, and it definitely doesn't matter as much. But I think you can definitely still see some. We'll see. You know, there's a lot of legislation going around. We'll see in this next age of college football if you sort of return to some of those not grassroots recruiting ideals or techniques. But I think that will start to matter, hopefully, a little bit more. I think right now in this little window, not as much. But I think it still exists, even if the tiniest percent.
Well, that would be going up to, I think it's in Northwest Mississippi, but anyways, it'd be good to go ahead and get involved in Lake Cormorant, because you're going to have probably three like Power Four level defensive linemen one year after another. So, and it's starting with Eric Volks. Guys, I asked Eric, the X is enunciated there, so it's Eric Volks. I thought it was maybe silent. That's
told
on
you
me.
Guys.
You did.
And I'm glad Colby, you got that clarified. I'll make Eric, sure to forget it immediately.
No, you'll remember it. You're good with names. You'll remember that. You're welcome. I did that
for you. Chris will remember the car that he drove up in.
What's his nickname, Chris?
I don't know. All right.
Every single family member that came with him.
As compared to Carlos May, he's about 40 pounds lighter and an inch shorter, but he is a versatile guy on the defensive front. I think you can play edge. I think you can slide him inside and cheat a little bit with him at
time. Dude, Tony White has a type, Chris. I was watching his highlights before we started. He has a type, and this is it.
FSU, Mizzou, Tennessee are currently to set up OVs. Arkansas is one to keep an eye on because where he is from is very close to the state line between Mississippi and Arkansas. So they're kind of like the nearby school other than the Mississippi schools. They're actually probably the closest school, I think. So FSU this weekend, next weekend currently open. But again, I think you can keep an eye on maybe an Auburn or an Arkansas trying to fill that. Mizzou, Tennessee are the ones that are supposed to fill out the schedule. He visited FSU along with a teammate who's a 28 D lineman that you were referencing, that they have a few guys in the pipe. They were both here for a good bit of time one day, a lot of time with T-Knight. T-Knight's invested time with those kids in that school. That's kind of been a place that he's been after a few guys for a couple years now, this being one of them. At that time, I would say that the main contenders were FSU and Tennessee. I still think that's sort of the case. I think if FSU hits it out of park this weekend with him, he is a guy they have the potential of shutting it down with before he takes other visits. But they also have to come to the right number and make sure they do everything correctly with him.
Yeah, I think that's one to watch too. I think if everyone in this group right now that we've mentioned so far, that feels like the one where you probably have the most traction with, for the reasons Chris mentioned. Let's see. Real quick, on him,
stat-wise, 75 tackles, 18 tackles for loss, 6 sacks last year. He's had 9 sacks over the last two seasons while playing 22 games.
It's good. Yeah. It's good production.
I think they feel pretty solid about him. A lot of these recruitments, it's like Tennessee's involved, so you're trying to get a sense for like, oh, is he a top priority for Tennessee? Will he end up at Missouri? The feeling is that Florida State likes him a good amount. In my opinion, like 89 grade D lineman in the Southeast, like that's exactly who they should be going and locking up. You have a realistic shot with some of those guys, and I think this one makes a lot of sense based off the production and just the trajectory that he can kind of grow into. I heard like from someone that's evaled him that they feel like he can even potentially grow into like a nose and put on a good amount of weight and be a force on the interior. That was just one person's opinion, but goes to show that he can be a pretty, I think, versatile prospect.
He plays a lot of like one tech and stuff like that in his high school highlights. He kind of reminded me of Mandrell Desir. That's when I was like, oh, he's got a type. Tony has a type. Like, that's just kind of the build and movement stuff there was similar. But yeah, that would be a good one. That's one that the SEC schools are in on, and Yeah, those are the type of battles that you need to win consistently if you're going to have a chance to not just make it through the season, but then to replenish it and start building it. And we talked about the narrow path for Mike Norvell. Like, these are the kind of ones that I think you have to do well on, right? And you have to hit the analysis, you have to hit the development, and obviously you have to win the recruiting battle before either of those.
Can I just say how impressive it is that Colby already has the full Florida State
game? Yeah, set up. Yeah.
He apparently has FSU bed sheets already too.
Is that true, Colby?
It is very true. Should I walk you over there? I don't know if it's made.
Yeah,
I'm in this Airbnb. All right, you know what?
Yeah, go walk over while we – so go show us that real quick, Chris. Antoine Lockett, go. Wide receiver from Colquitt County.
Yeah, South Georgia kid, FSU. Louisville was on the schedule, but now it's kind of to be determined. His entire schedule.
I'm gonna get a screenshot.
All right, for those listening and not watching, check it out on the YouTube.
As of now, FSU is the only one truly locked in with him as far as OVs. Interesting thing with him, took a junior day visit in January, immediately got the offer from FSU after that. They sort of ascended to his leader role, came back in the spring, took another visit, took in the offense, spent a lot of time with Tim Harris, wide receiver coach and OC alongside Mike Norvell. He's also got a relationship with Chris Thompson, who's always done a good job at the school up there. Yeah, that feels like one that is, if FSU wants it, they can go get it. Like, they've sort of been the school for him since January 31st when he took that junior day visit. The offer came, if I remember correctly, either February 1st or February 2nd. And then he visited early April, and now he's back here. It's sort of like those are the last four benchmark moments in his recruitment. They've all centered around FSU.
We don't have any. I'm looking at his profile. We don't have any other official visits listed right now.
There was a point where Louisville was on schedule for June 12th. I think as of right now, that's sort of up in the air.
It's still on the timeline. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it off.
I like his photo of Chris. Like, it's Chris's photo of him, and it's him in the snow.
I was going to ask if that was a knee photo the one day it snowed. 100%. That's crazy.
There's like a 50-50 chance that it's a knee photo.
That's true. On like every profile across the network.
Yeah, that's true. There was one time a player was like, "Hey, can you use this photo of me?" And he sent it to me, and I like knew right away. Was that taken of you at Florida State? And he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "That's a knee."
I'm trying to get like him, man. But I mean, like I said, still trying to familiarize myself with the board and see kind of where they're at with different prospects. I would say at receiver, if that's not one, he's not even a bigger body guy, probably like 6 foot or whatever. But if that's not one that you shut down, it doesn't really seem like anyone else is involved. I mean, who do you have left? Mugerwa from Pennsylvania.
Cam Wade.
That's your big body.
Yeah, Cam. But I would say with both of those, Virginia Tech's board shifted. Jaden Kelly Murray, you know, they kind of pivoted off. He went to Colorado. They're in a battle with Maryland for Miles McAfee, kind of their top guy. Cam Wade just recently transferred to Virginia. He's on that June 5th weekend with Virginia Tech. They're going to probably recruit him at receiver if he steps on campus. They kind of really like him at DB or just as an athlete. So that's one that I know from their side that they feel pretty good on. And depending on their numbers there, if they get McAfee, I think it's really between now Rutgers and Virginia Tech for Mukerwa, with I think FSU maybe on the outside looking in, just with some of their receivers' numbers changing. So outside of him, I know they like Fennell as a dynamic scat guy. The other receiver from Shelby, North Carolina, I can't think of his name, but I don't know if he makes
it. Jay Thompson, but he's a Georgia-Alabama battle, and Sean Green's another one, and that's a Georgia-FSU battle. But Georgia
and Sean Green's the top of the board guy, right? Like that's the guy that you're going to battle against, but Georgia's right in it. So I feel like this is one that after this weekend, you know.
I do think it's a position where FSU is not desperate for numbers. Like, I think they like their young group in that room. I think Tim Harris is comfortable with the group he has. I don't think they're in a massive rush. I think their biggest priority, truthfully, and it's kind of funny because very few of the guys other than maybe Mugera and Wade, I think they want like a true big X receiver, but I think they've had trouble finding somebody who fits exactly what they want in that role. So I think it's one of those where they might take some patience with it, see if somebody comes about, maybe early season film next year for guys who are uncommitted or committed to lower places and or portal season. So go ahead, Zach.
I was gonna say, there's not a lot of options at like for a true like X receiver in the Southeast, especially in the state of Florida this year. It's just most of the high level receivers are slot guys or guys that are, you know, barely over 6 foot. So yeah, you're right. I think they have been looking for that taller, you know, more lengthy option at the position and haven't really been able to find one regionally that makes sense. So it's caused them to kind of go out of region and, you know, with where they are right now and the recruiting landscape, it's a bit more difficult to do that.
Sorry, there's a kid committed somewhere and I was trying to help. Not to Florida State, don't worry, guys. It's way too early for that. All right, so that's the official visit weekend for the first one. Let's talk about Kobe's travels to Tallahassee. A 15-hour car ride, I heard, from the mountains of Virginia down to the sloping Nat line of South Georgia, and then finally into muggy, warm, rainy Tallahassee.
There's mountains in like West Virginia. I'm where I'm at, like my house is technically like below sea level. Where
are you? Leave Blacksburg?
Yeah, no, I was leaving the coastal side, which was where this journey starts, you know. Very eventful day, one for the books, you know. I've done quite a bit of travel, fortunately, for this gig and just surfing or going wherever. But this was one. So I have a Ford Ranger. Love that truck. Had a couple trucks, actually. First truck, issues. This truck actually just got some issues. Warranty on a transmission. She's going good. But you know what? I was like, yeah, this trip, I'm coming down for official visits only. We'll take the more safe option, the 2002 Lexus, you know, no issues, nothing, no, nothing wrong. So I don't know. Our listener base probably has no idea where this is in Virginia, but I'm cruising along maybe like 45 minutes, an hour away from my house, heading west so I can hop on 95 South. Driving through an area in Virginia where there's a sheriff on every corner because it goes from like 65 to 25, 65 to 25 in all these towns.
Jersey for South Georgia.
Yeah. I was about to say, GSP, you know, we had a couple nods as there's flames coming out of my car. But anyways, oh, actually, on my first time to FSU, I got pulled over. Now I'm getting ADHD brain. I got pulled over for going too slow because this guy did like this crazy
thing maneuver. I have never, ever, ever said.
That's wild.
Well, no, because you know what happened? I was ripping, and then I didn't realize I was probably going like 60 because it was like a 55 I was on, and then all of a sudden – I see a 25, and this guy just rips through the median, does a burnout, kicks like a ton of sod into the road, comes right behind me, like right behind me. I'm like, all right, I'm gassed. I'm cooked. Just runs my plates, I guess, and then rips around me, does it again, and then he's just following me. And like, this is when I'm headed to Tallahassee. I'm probably maybe 5 miles from the state line, if that. And then he pulls me over, and I'm in the left lane. And he's like, yep, you're holding up traffic, going too slow. I'll give you a warning, but no worries.
You should have sped to Tallahassee. Once you pass state lines, you're in the clear.
Well, I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, let me just get across the line.
But, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Anyway, okay, but this time, you know, we're heading west, and then, you know, I come to a stoplight in one of these little towns. I'm like, oh, that's funny. There's a guy in front of me have, like, really gnarly exhaust, or, oh, no, that's some steam coming out of my engine. So I pull off into a Love's travel stop, nowhere better to be, and see that coolant is low. So I think we got a coolant leak, got it relatively fixed, but then going through parts of South Carolina into like Savannah, Georgia, pretty much got the whole Christmas tree on the dash. Now all the gauges read well, but you know, got a ton of error messages, so that was really fun. And you know, the only way to keep an engine cool is to run the heat full blast. So it was a pretty cool day yesterday in South Georgia. And so that was fun too. That was really fun. And then, yeah, it started raining. And actually when like it triggered like the check engine, like traction control and like VSC or whatever on this car, like it all disabled. So it was raining.
Sounds like Cole needs a new car, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Who did Chris mention before we hopped on this podcast? You got to talk to someone. But yeah, spinning the tires at like 40 miles an hour in like the rain, you know, getting blown around. But no, it was really cool. And now I'm stoked to be here. And we got some beautiful weather today. Got to head to a baseball press conference. So yeah, very eventful trip. One for the record books. Probably took a couple years off my mom's and grandma's life. You know, I shouldn't include them in, but good times nonetheless.
This reminds me of, I think, as we talk about you driving through rain, I want to talk about one of my favorite Zach stories as we bid him farewell. But I'm going to let it from from the perspective of Chris, who is in the back seat during this. So if you want to set the stage, Christopher, I'll let you do a little story time.
Were we on the pike? I think we were on the turnpike, right?
We were heading back from South Florida. So yeah, that sounds right. That or 75.
We're driving some Hellcat or something that has way too loud of an engine, way too big of an engine for somebody like Zach. He's just not mentally and physically there yet as a youngster to handle such an automobile. And it's pouring. I mean, it's torrential. It's cats and dogs, as they like to say. And I'm in the back seat just chilling in the middle. You know, if we run into something, I'm probably going to go flying through the window if the seatbelt breaks. And Zach, God bless him, has one eye that works better than the other. You know, we all have our deficiencies. And that rain is coming down. And Brendan and him are going back and forth like the two old ladies they can be at times. And Zach just kind of starts not even melting down. I wouldn't describe it as a meltdown, but Zach just let us know that essentially he was driving and could not see.
He turned over to me and said, I can't, screamed, I can't see. And then I just wanted to know,
I'm in the back seat. I took it all in stride. Like, what was going to be was going to be.
I just looked back at Chris. I remember looking back at Chris and him just having a blank expression. I'm like, yeah, dude, Zach, help me.
He turned back to Chris.
I'm in the back seat. I can't help you.
Which, if you can't see, keeping your eye on the road is probably the one like thing that you should be doing, is not taking it off to then scream at someone that you can't see. What was Chris going to do to help you there?
I don't know.
You guys don't let me drive. I'm admittedly a bad driver.
I always feel like I'm going to die when Chris drives.
But have you?
No, to be fair, no one has died yet. So yeah. Here's another travel story with Chris. It was Chris, Bob Ferranti, and I. We were coming back from Jacksonville. I don't remember what the trip was specifically, but we had a rental car. And Chris is used to, at that point, you had the big bodied, it wasn't
the Chevy truck. Tahoe. Yeah,
yeah, the Tahoe. So it fit well with Chris's driving style of just kind of like muscling out people and just, yeah.
The old Kenny Dillingham, I'm bigger than the others on the road theory.
It, essentially, yeah. It was a lot of like 6'6", like 1990s power forward element to the way Chris drives. And so he got into it with like this young kid where they were trying to like drive past each other, and Chris tried to zoom past him, and like they were going back and forth and became this rivalry for like 5 minutes. I was like, Chris, stop. And he's driving.
Brendan legit thought he was going to die.
Yeah. It's cause we were in like it was like almost like a European, like little like car. It was one of the smallest like type of little, it was less than a sedan. It was tiny, whatever it was. And Chris tried to like go around him at one point and the guy wouldn't let him. And then we almost rear-ended someone. We had to stop. And I just remember looking over and this kid like looks over at us and laughed. And I was just, it was so humiliating. It was because it shouldn't have been a battle we picked anyways to begin with. And I felt helpless and I thought I was going to die. And then I felt shame. And it was
Chris. We didn't almost rear-end somebody, but Brendan felt like we did. Don't worry, Colby. I'm reformed now. I drive much more sane.
Mm-hmm.
Having two children and teaching one of them to drive will really like nip that in.
Yeah, that'll calm you down a little bit.
So we'll do on Sunday. It'll be officially Zach's last day. There's an elite prospect camp, and so we'll be there. He'll be in Tallahassee. I'll be covering it together for one last time, and also be Kobe's introduction to covering recruiting at Florida State. So it'll be a good time there.
And then on that day, we'll go back to Zach and see his comp of Logan Flaherty after seeing me in person again. So on the spot, we're gonna need that comp.
Yeah, well, you'll actually get one. I have another one. Andrew Ivan said John Reese Plumlee, which I thought was like a little taller version of it, which I thought was not bad given
he's athletic, but I don't know if he's
that athletic
athleticism. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought like it didn't make sense from like a when I was watching him, I'm like, that kind of feels like a Gus Malzahn.
I also think he's a better passer than JRP was.
John Reese, right? It was Reese Plumlee or Rice? Reese. Remember when Florida State was going to get him after Sam Howell decommitted, and they had a plan to get him or Lance Lejeune, who ended up playing wide receiver? Those are good times, too. The quarterback recruiting has not been great for a while, fellas.
That position has been some mental and physical beatings for covering FSU.
Yeah, like James Blackman's probably the best, like,
prospect. But it's not important because it's only the most important position in football.
And that was Jimbo. And then he got thrown to the Wolves early and just, you know, kind of.
And I love me some David Hill, but how many damn tiers do we need for quarterbacks? Okay. Did you see that? Did you read the 138? There's like 23 tiers. I just.
I love Tears.
Yeah, but 23, my man. Like, come on.
When it's Florida State quarterbacks, it's Tears and Tears. Am I right?
Hey.
Am I right? It's pretty good.
Proud of yourself.
We will do on Sunday, we'll drop an episode that Trey Rowland interviews Zach to kind of go over some of his favorite memories of, like, how long has this been? 5 years you've been up, like, officially with Knowles 24/7?
Officially, four? Yeah. But I've been interning for, or I started interning like 7 years ago.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Especially because you're what, 24, 25?
26.
Oh, I was close. All right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's damn near a married man. Give him some respect.
Yeah. He was a pup though when he started. That's my point. And I want to go over a memory of Zach. Let's see. One was the kid trying to get a job with us on Twitter, just like jumping into my different stories and like, hey, Brandon, can I get a job? So his energy's changed a lot. Now he's very serious and professional. But Chris and I were not on board with Zach joining initially. And Josh,
I'm never on board, if we're being honest. Like, Josh used to ask to talk me into pretty much anything like that. Like, I know who I am.
Josh,
I'm excited to go sit next to each other at this baseball press.
Colby got endorsed real fast.
Can we get a bench photo? Can we get one before it all goes up in flames? Got endorsed. Like, I can show my mom, look, it was real for a little bit.
Josh was like, no, he really wants to. I think he'd be good. I'm like, I don't know. I find him to be kind of irritating. I don't like people like that. That's basically the back and forth in that conversation 7 years ago.
And Josh was like, I'll get it. And he did, to be fair. And Zach was very, I think one of my favorite things about just like as a professional dynamic with Zach is that takes criticism well, although he's gotten much better at that, but he does take it to heart and learns from it. So that's like, he actually listens to it and gets better. And over the last like 2 or 3 years, like he takes criticism like a champ too. But initially there was a bit of a feeling out process. No,
you don't think
you were ever a little, like, okay.
no one likes to be criticized, but I think it matters how you internalize it and then potentially change it. If you care about who's, you know, critiquing you, or because I knew you were coming from a good place.
Thank you, Zachary. But yeah, I feel bad that Zach's time with Knowles 24/7 has been covering the recruiting of just not great results. Because I think Zach would have had a lot of, it would have been even more fun if he was associated with just like top five classes. And unfortunately, a lot of the, you know, how is class formed type of articles were Falk on the Roads and Travis Hunter's and KJ Bolden's. And that's kind of, I mean, I'm not trying to take shots. It's just, it is.
How was that Travis Hunter day? I know I'm like skipping.
Oh, dude, it's documented. We decided that day and only that day. We haven't done that before or since, was to do a live stream of just the entire signing day. And Josh got word that things were going poorly. And on the bottom of because he hadn't signed yet, on the bottom we had a little ticker saying, you know, don't worry about Travis Hunter, like everything's fine. You know, just stop asking. And Josh said, hey guys, check your phones. And we looked down and I said, oh, I'm gonna take off the ticker. And that's when the freak out started, I think, from the FSU fan base. So we had Ingram Smith, who was with the Knollcast at the time. He's now the head of the Battle's End Collective. So he was with us then, joined, and we were supposed to have a bunch of other people join as well, but like it went from a party to a funeral pretty quickly after that. So that was a time to be alive. Zach was down in South Florida covering who's recruitment?
Daniel Lyons.
Was it really? All right, look at Daniel that.
Lyons and, hey, look, a level of retention.
Yeah, Daniel Lyons and Dante Anderson in Homestead. There was no Wi-Fi. So I get out and immediately get on I'm in the car on the live stream, and Josh drops that news. And I, you know, I think there's someone got like a screenshot of my reaction to it. I think back then it was wild.
Do you think they still want me to put Dante Anderson in the class in the rankings?
That was the fan base was so hurt that they wanted someone who was a PWO in the rankings, because I think it was ESPN just never updated. basically. So he was a composite four star, maybe, or at least close to it.
He was like an 89 grade four star.
Yeah, because of it. And so, yeah, that was the fan base was, or parts of the our fan base were pretty salty over that too. Yeah. So a very interesting time for Zach to be covering Florida State recruiting and being the one associated with documenting it, but has truly done it at an elite level. And on behalf of all of us, things are like, we're all happy and proud of Zach, happy for him. And like, this is going to be an awesome role for him as well. And he'll still be around, you know, at Knowles 24/7 dropping in stuff. I think that's important because he is still with the 247 network, and be able to provide more context from a national scope, and we'll be helping us fill in blanks as well with recruitments from the state of Florida as well. So Zach, you know how I feel, no need for me to get mushy on it, but appreciate everything that you've done during your time here and getting to become your friend as well over this time. So thank you and congratulations.
Yeah, go spread your wings and fly. I mean, I think you're going to kick ass doing what you're about to do. I think it's what's made for you. You're good at relationships. You're excellent at building them. You care about finding information. You're good at providing information to people. I've desperately wanted 24/7 to be better in the state of Florida. I think you're a perfect upgrade for that. So I'm happy as hell for you. I am going to miss you around these parts. Me and you certainly bang heads at times, but I bang heads with everybody. That's sort of what I do. But I am proud of you. You're very good at what you do, and I'm very happy for you. And as someone who in my past did a similar move as you, I think it's going to be awesome for you. I think you're going to learn so much, and most of it's going to be self-taught, and you're going to be really, really good at what you do.
I appreciate both of you. Yeah, I mean, as you both know, like when I first joined, I had no idea what I was doing, and I was not going about things the right way when I somehow got the opportunity to join you guys. But I mean, just the countless hours of, you know, covering these events together, you know, learning how to do things the right way. I mean, I attribute that almost exclusively to you two and Josh and you know, all the rest of the people that we've had contributing over the years. Like, it's yeah, it's been incredible. It's been a fun ride, even with all the moments that we talk about. You know, I couldn't have asked for a better, you know, 7 or so years of doing this job. I mean, it's a dream job. And I talk about this more with Trey. We'll drop that like Brendan said on Sunday, but just like to the OTB audience and the Knowles 24/7 community, I mean, it's a huge reason why I wanted to stay on the site for as long as I did. Like, I had, you know, like conversations about an opportunity like this a while ago, but you know, I value the community that we built at Knowles 24/7. Like, you know, I feel like right now you don't get the full experience of it, and you know, I think that's something that you know, for Colby to be excited about once Florida State turns things around, which they eventually will. Like, it is, there's not many you know, cities, towns, communities that are better to be a part of. And yeah, I can't thank the support or, you know, the people enough for their support on our website and our viewership on this podcast. It's been instrumental for me and my growth. So gonna miss this for sure. But I won't be far, and I'll be on the site and hopefully on the site a lot more in the future once the recruiting gets turned around.
I don't know how to transition from this, but we probably should talk about baseball. That's my fault.
And now Zach's favorite sport. So yeah, Tallahassee Regional starts this weekend. FSU was a number 10 national seed, landed appropriately, in my opinion, where they should have been as far as national seeds go. The bigger thing on this, and we talked about this on Sunday Golds, I did that with Ari and Brett yesterday, where we talked for about an hour and a half about the regional and everything. For me, it was, and this is obviously looking ahead, but if they were to make a super, who did they match up with? And the likelihood was it was going to be, you know, like an Alabama, who is who they ultimately do match up with, or Florida, which I don't think anybody really wants, especially with the season that FSU's had against them in baseball in particular, or somebody like a UNC who ended up the 5, who's really, really good. so on and so forth. Texas being an 0-1, Austin Regional being the other most likely one they would match up with. Texas is a pretty good baseball club. Austin's a tough place to play. I think if you're picking out of the three of Texas, Alabama, and Florida, I think Bama's the best one you want to pick. One, you know, power numbers aren't great. They commit a decent amount of errors. They're a good baseball team, but I don't think they're on par with those other two we're discussing that. So that was sort of like the thing on seeding day that stood out to me from the FSU perspective. Other things on seeding day was UNC got a really tough regional for being one of 4 or 5 best teams in the country. Thought it was interesting. Arkansas didn't get a national seed, but that meant Kansas and West Virginia both did. Kentucky getting in the field was probably the most interesting team into the field. You know, Mercer not getting in was probably the team that most deserved to be in that didn't get in. Yeah. From an FSU perspective, Tallahassee Regional is this weekend. Coastal Carolina, very established baseball names coming to town as the number 2 seed. They're number 27 in the RPI. They're 9-9 against Quad 1. They're a really good baseball team that's got some flaws this year. They've dealt with some pitching issues, namely Fluky, who's their ace, being unavailable for a vast majority of the season. He is now available. It'll be interesting how much he's allowed to throw. I don't think he's thrown more than 4 innings in an outing since he's come back, which is 3 or 4 outings that he's been back for. If I had to guess, he's probably a 5-inning, 75-pitch guy going into this weekend. But Coastal, you know, 9-9 against Quad 1, so they've been tested. They're willing to go play good teams. They've played multiple ACC teams this year, racking up a few wins against them. They're the type of school that can come to a regional and win it regardless of where it is. Like, I don't think they're going to be ultra intimidated by Hauser, despite it being a great atmosphere. The other two teams in the Tallahassee regional are St. John's and NIU. NIU will play Coastal in their first game. NIU hasn't been in a tournament since Colby and Zach have been alive combined. And then St. John's is kind of a, you know, solid Big East type program who's earned the right to be there by winning a regular season and a postseason tournament and being the best team in their league. And those teams are capable and good. If you really want to dive in depth on it, I would say listen to Sunday Golds. We really went pretty deep on every team and discussing them. To me, the wild card of the whole weekend, non-FSU, is Fluky for Coastal. He's the type of guy that can pitch them to a win single-handedly, and he can change the dynamics of a weekend.
His name is Fluky?
Yeah, his last name is Fluky. I think it's Cameron Fluky, if I remember correctly, on the first name.
That doesn't bode well for Florida State. I don't like that at all.
Why? Just because it sounds like a great headline.
When Fluky happens and a guy named Fluky's involved in it? I don't know.
Yeah, Cameron Fluky. So Fluky was an ace last year. Like, he was one of the best players in college baseball last year. He got hurt after his first outing this year. He's only been back for about a month. Like I said, they're slowly ramping him up. He did about 2 innings, 2 innings, 4 innings, 4 innings in those first times back. He only has 20 innings on the entire year. Now, last season, he had 118 strikeouts in 102 innings. So, like, he is capable of being a dude. He's viewed as, like, a top 15 level MLB draft pick, despite missing most of this year. Because he's been unavailable, Coastal's kind of had to piece it together as a pitching staff. Darren Horn, who's actually a reliever for them, is probably their most important arm. 29 appearances, the type of guy that kind of strikes me as though when they need a few innings to kind of navigate a game, he's able to do it. And then at the plate, Rex Watson is their best offensive player, 16 doubles, 12 home runs, batting 295, driven in 64. So, like, he's sort of the guy. Coastal is a team that I believe can come in here and do something. Now, the interesting thing with Coastal is they're 8-12 or 9-11 over the last 20, so they're kind of limping into the regional. They haven't played exactly great baseball leading up to this. That all being said, they have been tested throughout the year. NIU program that's taken a massive step. They third-year coach, and I think they jumped about 14 wins this season from the prior 2 seasons under him. So kind of speaks to them taking a big leap. A lot of transfers. They do have one pitching starter, Max Vazila. He's, I forget his exact record. I think he's 8-0. They're like 14-0 when he starts and 14-1 when he appears. So, like, he is sort of the guy that dictates terms for them. But I presume he'll pitch against Coastal more than likely. So FSU, if they were to upset Coastal, would most likely not have to see him. So that sets him up. Cole Smith, who plays for them in the field, is probably the best offensive player in the entire regional. He's just very good hitter, 364, 17 doubles, 3 triples, 6 home runs, 9 stolen bases, doesn't strike
out. What's his nickname? What's his nickname?
Cole Clutch Smith. We're just going to call him Clutch.
Ooh.
And then St. John's, like, you know, everybody that makes a regional usually has one dude who can pitch, at least one dude who can pitch, and they do. Liam O'Leary is their ace. I presume that's who FSU sees. He's a 100-inning guy for them, sub-3 ERA, not a high strikeout guy, not a high walk guy. He's more put the ball in play, let his defense play behind him type of guy.
sorry, Chris. So we got a Liam O'Leary for St. John's.
Yes.
What was NIU's pitcher's name? Max what?
Max, it's Vasvila, I believe. It's V-A-I-S-V-I-L-A for the last name.
I assume it's Italian. Vasvila. Maybe not, though, the way it's spelled.
You think it would be that. And then,
well, then course, I think the O'Leary one's definitely Irish, right?
I mean, I would hope an O'Leary's an Irish dude.
May not be.
So it's a good regional. I think it's a very winnable regional, personally, for FSU. But that also comes down to win your first game. Like, you can't put yourself into that hole. Brett's done a very good job. We had a preview earlier in the week where he compared, you know, runs per game, OPS, average, OBP, home runs, K to walks, stolen bases for all four teams, as well as a lot of defensive numbers like ERA, WHIP, fielding percentage, home runs allowed, K per nine, BBB per nine. Yeah. And like I said, Sunday Golds that we did yesterday, we dived in on each team, talked a lot about it. I think the biggest thing with Coastal is, what does Fluky do? How much can he do? The other thing hanging over Coastal is that their head coach is probably the leading candidate for the South Carolina job.
Oh, yeah. Let's get a little controversy.
He's done a good job navigating that. Like, his comments on it have been very limited, but like, not like, oh, I'm not talking to him. It was more like, my agents had conversations, but I'm focused on my team type of stuff. Yeah. But that looms. That's one of those things that I'm sure will continue to be talked about on TV and be out throughout the media throughout the weekend.
Okay. So let's wrap it up here with, we'll have you guys go to Knowles 24/7 for coverage of baseball, because Chris will be doing it. Brett will be doing it. Brett, producer Brett, nod your head or shake it for me. Kid show. Are you going to be in Tallahassee for this one? Or be doing it remotely? That's not
He is coming into town. He is. After the press conference that happens at 11:30 this morning, he's going to hit the road and come up.
And Kobe will be getting his taste of baseball as well. So, follow us for all the updates at Knowles 24/7 throughout the weekend. Zach is coming up for the Elite Camp, so we'll be having a lot of coverage as well for that. I'll be helping out with recruiting stuff with Chris this weekend as well. So yeah, we'll be as on top of it as we can. Also, check out Knowles247.com. We've begun our 40 most important players countdown. Chris had the crazy, which I loved it, idea of just doing all 40 at once, just doing one giant slideshow. Almost did it. We just need to stretch out content a little bit more, if I'm being transparent in the process. But I thought Chris thinking that much outside the box, oh, I loved it. It's like your partner tried something new after a long time, you know? It just got me excited. But sorry. On that note, Kobe, welcome to On the Bench. Zach, thank you for your tour of duty. Service has ended here. We appreciate everything you've done here. Check out Zach's goodbye episode on Sunday with Trey Rowland. For everyone here, I'm Brendan Sinone. This has been On the Bench. We'll talk to you guys soon.